to the Hurricane Sandy-ish edition of the Hockey Writers. I'm your host, Chris Waffle, and yes, of course we still have power. The storm slowed up, people. The number, as always, is 1-347-826-7358. My trusty co-hosts, Ross Fernander and Timothy Rosenthal, are with us. Joshua Smith is going to try and make it on, folks. I know it's been a little tougher down his way. So far, so good, ladies and gentlemen. No damage, just some wind. Somebody's cable wire went flying out at 2 o'clock. It's all good. You know, if I didn't know better, it was like watching the Albany Devils last night. Folks, if you saw it, you were subjected to probably the worst hockey you've ever seen. Worse than the Texas Stars, Ross. Just trust me.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
How bad was it? I counted maybe two or three good scoring chances the whole night.
As bad as that is, it might be worse than the current situation with the Providence Bruins right now.
I can't believe some of what's going on in the AHL. Obviously, we have esteemed guest Jeff Little on with us. Jeff knows probably more about the business of hockey on one finger than we do on all of our digits combined.
And that's because I'm older than dirt. That's why.
Hey, I'm 37. Oh, wait. Speaking of my South Jersey compatriot, ladies and gentlemen, we bring him on. Mr. Joshua Smith, welcome to the machine. Good evening.
Good evening, Chris. Glad to be braving the storm, the wind, and the rain to be here tonight.
Wait. There's rain?
There is rain.
I haven't seen rain yet. They're depriving me of it.
I'll tell you, you're not missing much.
No.
I do without it, but yeah, it's headed your way.
Okay, kids. The quick weather forecast, according to the Weather Channel, which has been wrong before many times. Apparently, the hurricane force wind gusts are supposed to hit the Jersey Shore about lunch, which means about dinner time it should hit here eventually, with an 11-foot storm surge around the Raritan Bay, which feeds into the Raleigh River. Thanks. Now, yeah, folks, I may not get flooding the traditional way. No. The water may come inward. Yeah. I mean, all in all, not as bad as what the Jersey Shore is going to see. If you're up and down the coast, literally from the Outer Banks up to almost north of where Timmy is even, you're going to see something, whether you like it or not. The best I can say is heed the goddamn warnings, okay? These people, do not be stupid. Do not do what Chris has done the night before a hurricane and go surfing in it. The things you don't want to do. By the way, just to sort of reiterate the point real quick before we go into the hockey, there's a water rise in the Raritan Bay of over 3.5 feet already. I just say it. So far,
yeah,
so good.
3.5 feet. That's a lot considering the storm still got about another day to swing on through.
Yeah, it's taking its time, folks.
It's only going gradually weaken as the days progress. It's not even.
It's going to be an annoying little bugger, to say the least. I've likened this to the New Jersey Devils 2012 playoff run. You think it's going to die, and it somehow keeps coming back.
I'm looking at that Albany box score. It's not so bad. They outshot Hershey.
Bad.
They outshot them almost 2-1. It looked like. I mean, they lost.
Point is, out of all those shots, the scoring chances were. I mean, it looked like we were taking shots like the Rangers do on Verdun. I had to. I know.
I'll tell you.
Henry scored this weekend. Be thankful. I saw that. I actually can't because the switchboard is sort of not doing what it wants to do. I am bringing in another tag team partner into the discussion. He actually, Well-Timed had an article today on the issue of guaranteed contracts. So this kind of goes perfect with the discussion tonight, because if I have to hear one more thing about the weather, I'll shoot myself. That means. I swear, I have heard this on every channel. Unfortunately, my girlfriend is right in between me and Josh down in Middletown. Her school is closed for almost the whole week because it's a shelter. Go figure, they put a shelter near the water, practically. Nobody saw about that one. But I do bring on, also from the Hockey Writers tonight, Mr. Mark Ritter. This should work. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. Are you sure it's not Hurricane Batman that's coming your way?
I'm starting to really wonder.
I don't know. It depends. If it's going to stall in the ocean, spin around for a while and do nothing and get nowhere, then maybe it is.
Maybe it's a lockout, yeah.
It kind of, you know, in a bizarre way, it kind of is when you think about it, because it really should have either went up the coast by now, curved in, or went out to sea. So, yeah, in a sense, it's kind of it's kind of goofy. For perspective, for the people that were around in 1962, it's like that storm. I had to do my historical reading. But, all right, into the hockey, ladies and gentlemen. This week, unfortunately, Gary Bettman decided to cancel a whole bunch of games, like 191 of them, or the whole month of November, whichever comes first. So now that we know that hockey is not going to be played till at least December 1st, wink, wink, I've got to ask you guys, when in the wide, wide world of sports do we see NHL action? And you can also answer if we see it at all. Basically, we'll just go around the I'll let Josh go first, and he's the one most suffering by the hurricane.
Thanks, Chris. I've been, this is really forcing my hand, because I've been a proponent of the Thanksgiving return of hockey, and I still don't think it's out of the question. I think there's a chance that we could get back on the schedule and get to hockey before the end of November. But that's my optimistic outlook. Realistically, I think we're kicking off the season with the Winter Classic.
All right, let's see. Going next down the hurricane line, but Timmy?
Realistically, I don't know if it is possible. I mean, you're hearing all the media and PR spin now, as you have for the past few weeks, but I still believe they have to play a season. There's too much to lose, especially with the new TV contract that they signed. So I'm actually going to give it a interesting time frame, and that would be between Christmas and the Winter Classic.
Okay, I'm going to let Jeff in on this one, because he probably has a unique perspective unlike mine. So go right ahead, Jeff.
I tend to be an optimist, but I say it's going to happen by Thanksgiving, that we'll be playing hockey by Thanksgiving. And my basic reason for that is I think they want to have the Winter Classic, and they got to pay a big chunk of change in about 3 days Michigan to make that happen. Once that chunk of change is spent, hockey will be played.
Right.
So you know, that might be the bellwether thing. If the Winter Classic isn't canceled in about 72 hours, then I think we play hockey sometime in November.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark, how about it?
Okay, yeah, no, I think I kind of agree with the last guy there. I know one thing, the NHL does have an option of spending about $100,000 in order to opt out of getting out of the Winter Classic, so that's not really a huge amount. To his point, though, I think there's too much to lose, too much momentum that's been gained, too much to be lost, and we're talking about well over 100,000 people that are going to be in attendance in Michigan to see that game. Not only that, you're talking about two original six teams, arguably the two biggest teams in hockey, although I'll get some arguments from New York Ranger fans, etc. There's just too much to lose. So really, I think the drop deadline is going to be around December 1st. Right now, they're still engaged in posturing in that poker game that has become the CBA. But they're really close, and I really think it's just a matter of time.
All right, Ross, you're the anchor leg. Don't let me down.
You know, having read Jeff's piece on overtime a few times, I don't think I really had a grasp of just how sick the league was and is, and overcoming a lot of that to me seems really difficult. Plus, I'm really familiar with Donald Fehr and a lot of things that he did in baseball, and I don't see a season happening. I mean, I think that I'm glad that Gary Bettman went ahead and canceled, you know, a month as opposed to going, 2 weeks at a time, as he was doing
right
before. But I don't think I had quite the numbers grasp, and I still don't. But from Jeff's article on overtime, it's clear to me that this is the league is sick. It is just messed up, and I don't see any clarification of that anytime soon. So for me, season's a wash. But you know what? 3 years ago, I became more of an NHL fan, so what do I care? Just kidding. No, I don't really think that. But
it's stranger for me, and I'm going to tie this in a sense. We did have the fantasy KHL draft last night, which I'm still shocked at the turnout. Josh, I thought absolute joke when I wrote this article a month ago. I really did. I even said it to Bruce at the time. I'm like, this is going to be an absolute joke of an article. In a sense, like, who the heck is going to respond to this? Who would actually join a league like this other than maybe five or six people? And we had to actually turn people away for this league. In the end, it's going to be about 20 to 22 people in this. And I have a lot more work to do than I ever thought I was going to. To be honest, I cannot see a season. I see the Winter Classic being completely axed at this point, unless something dramatically changes. Look, as much as I dislike Donald Fehr, and believe me, I do, I've actually had the fortune or misfortune of meeting him. When you sit down and talk to this guy, even for 2 or 3 minutes, the guy can make an argument out of sliced bread being, you know, a square piece of sliced bread being round, and make a case for it.
Well, I'm Alan Nicholson.
For better or for worse.
So
what's wrong? It's
right.
My job.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a great lawyer. He's very good at what he does.
Right, but so is that. And that's where you're at here. I've maintained from day one that neither one of these guys should be the true focal point of the negotiations. And until one side or the other, or both, blinks and says, we're going to make the decision and not you, we're going to be talking about this a month from now the same way. So, honestly, I don't see hockey until either one of these sides blink. And honestly, I'm almost to the point, guys, and I can't believe I'm saying this, where I almost don't care. I almost don't. It hurts in the sense that and it's not just the fact that I had season tickets 4 rows from the ice. That's not the reason. The reason, honestly, is the people that I have had the privilege to get to know, the public relations people that are pretty much out of work. Not the heads, you know, the Jeff Allstatlers of the world, you know, who head the Devils PR staff or co-head it. You know, they're not the people worrying. The ticket sales people that I've gotten to know, the interns that I've had the pleasure of getting to know, the media people. I mean, you know, Dan Rice is a perfect example. You know, I didn't even meet Dan Rice until last year. It was a total accident. You know, started talking to him. I forgot he was on the Devil's beat as long as he was, which goes to show you sometimes you just flat out forget these things. So that's where we're at, folks. You're going to get a divergent amount of opinions on this because, honestly, nobody really knows what's going to happen. Next question, and the most obvious, is to get into some of the points of what could and could not work if we were to try to forge an agreement on our own since we obviously know how to do this a little better than they do. Now, let's be honest. We have four. My girlfriend, who knows a lot about hockey, I'm amazed that at 22 years old, as much as she knows, she's like, let's put it this way, Chris. I've seen nothing but work stoppages in my lifetime. I was 2 years old when the first one happened, and I'm 22 now. So that's 4 and 20 years, basically. One strike, which lasted 10 days, and three lockouts, obviously. And the question she asked me is this. It's why I tied in perfect when Mark emailed about me about an hour ago. Well, what the heck about guaranteed contracts?
Yeah, I read Mark's article about guaranteed contracts. I think there's a harm in the league. I mean, in a sense that Mark, you mentioned football in that article, didn't you?
Yeah, really, it's the premise on what the NFL has their contracts go. There are no guaranteed contracts in the NFL. However, they do allow for considerable signing bonuses for any of these contracts, which are guaranteed. It does, however, allow, of course, for those teams to be able to get out of any contract that they deem to be an albatross or where a player is not playing up to expectation, which I think we'd all agree is something that's very important for these teams to have, especially in light of the fact that the NHL is proposing that all minor league salaries above $105,000 be counted against the team's cap. Obviously, that provision would prevent NHL clubs from bearing bad contracts in the AHL or any other professional league, such as the Rangers did.
The Wade Wetmore rule.
Humbly did with Jeff Finger. So if you're going to take that away, you still have to have some kind of an out. And I really think that guaranteeing these contracts, it's really not for the benefit of the league. It really is to the benefit of the players more than anything.
I agree with that completely. I don't think that it's appropriate. I mean, I know there's a buyout clause, there was a buyout clause in the CBA in the NHL, right, that allowed for only a certain number of players to be bought out each year. Isn't that right? And at a certain period of time?
Basically it goes double the length
right.
of the contract. They had a 10-year deal.
They
had 10 years to be able to get rid of it.
And there was, a 10-day window or something. I'm sorry. There was, like, a 10-day window to exercise that, I believe. Like, they had, I don't know if it was just prior to the start of free agency from the middle of
June
till July 1st. Yeah.
Right around June 1st. Buyout period.
And now, it's like two-thirds, right? Or isn't that
Yeah,
correct?
Two-thirds of the contract. And so just ask Alexei Yashin, who's still accounting for $2.204 million on the Isles payroll this year.
Yep.
And how ridiculous is that?
If you go to CapGeek, can you look at they have a buyout list there, and it dates back to about 2006, although there are only a couple guys on there from 2006, most of them are the last few years, and you look at the amounts, and it's over $120 million.
Right.
I mean, that's money paid out for work that, you know, was not done. In my mind, a lot of these guys are underachievers. You know, their productivity was far under their wages.
Wait, you're not telling me that Mike Commodore underperformed in Columbus?
No, but he sure had a really nice photo spread on Puck Daddy. I mean, isn't it sad that that is actually what Mike Commodore is more known for than anything else?
Yeah.
Actually, yesterday, Mike Commodore was Mike Commodore's seventh. The eighth anniversary of when Mike Commodore was the first guy to sort of break ranks last time, the lockout. He's the first guy to come out and say, I'll play under cap. I got no problem with that. And then someone else did that after him.
Mm-hmm. Well, Commodore is one of the guys who really benefited.
Effect from there.
Yeah.
I think other than the guaranteed contracts or the buyout period, the other thing that would be nice to at least have consideration, and I don't know that the owners or the player side would agree with this, but I think in some cases it would be nice to see them have a mutually agreed to option to either renegotiate or, I guess cancel buyout is pretty much the same thing. But for the teams and the players, when they realize that the contract is not good for either side, that they can either rework it, keep the player under contract, change the salary, change the terms, or something a little bit more favorable than a buyout, because you produce situations like Singer or Wade Redden, where I'm sure Redden at this point would take a smaller paycheck to be playing in the NHL, and I'm sure there are plenty of teams who would love to have him in their lineup, but because of the way the CBA is, he gets buried in the AHL. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I know he's taken it in stride. He's done a great job with the Connecticut Whale of helping with the young defensemen and things like that. But I'm sure the Rangers would love to have him off the books. I'm sure he'd be happy to give up some or part of his contract to be able to get back into the NHL, especially given the term that he signed for.
You say that, but isn't it? It's the players that are pushing for the guaranteed contracts in the first place, isn't that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, the irony.
And I think to that point, too, if you were to allow the teams to be able to get out of the contract so easily, then obviously the players would push for the same responsibility. They would ask for the same option. So that they felt that they were being underpaid, they would want their contract to be negotiated again, which is dangerous on both sides of the coin. I think the bottom line is that the NHL club is willing and able to buy out a player, essentially making that player an unrestricted free agent. The player has nothing to lose. He gets his money and gets an opportunity to go to a team that may or may not want him. I mean, it's still a win-win for the player. It doesn't hurt them, especially if you bring in the fact that they could go to a signing bonus program. They got all their money up front, or a good portion of it, probably anywhere between 20 and 40% up front. And then if they're not doing their job, or if the team wants to get out of the contract, they become a UFA again. And may the highest bidder win. All win-win for the player, if you ask me.
Well, yeah, see, you know, that's it. Just to me, these contracts, when a guy can get out of it, I mean, guys want longer contracts. I understand that. You know, everybody wants job security, you know, but...
Sure.
Exactly what does job security do? You can find out real quick. You just go down to the DMV, you know? I mean, that's where you're going to find people who have job security and are in no rush. I mean, their wages tend to exceed their productivity by far, okay? And I think long contracts have that same problem.
Yeah.
And so, to me, it's a win-win for the player, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think of guys like, you mentioned Yashin, but there are dozens of guys on buyouts right now, you know, who are earning money for doing nothing, for having done nothing, for having underachieved. And that's great for them, I guess. What's that?
Sorry, go ahead. Pardon me. I didn't mean to start.
It's great for the players, you know, I guess, but, I mean, granted, you know, I've never made much money, so I can't really speak to this, but I don't know how comfortable I would be making, you know, taking in a huge income for you know, for something not only did I not do, but for something that I failed at. You know, I mean, I know it's kind of a moral question here, but I guess I don't understand that mentality. You know, we have Cam Barker playing here in Austin right now, the Stars. I don't know what he's making, but he's making an AHL salary. But he's also on a buyout. Yeah, you know? I mean, he's not making that money right now, but the Wild still owe him, I think, $1 million or so, maybe $500,000 for 2 more years or something like that. I mean, it's in last year, what did he play, 20 games for the Oilers for $2.5 million?
He was probably more productive in those 20 games than Scott Gomez, though, who still manages to make how many $1 million a goal?
Almost $4 million.
Is it better than DiPietro's salary per se?
In a lot of ways,
I think it actually is. Yes,
I think the most amazing thing with DiPietro right now is that players who got bought out are still getting their paychecks from the NHL teams, and players that are injured are still getting their paychecks from the NHL teams. And this is probably the longest stretch he's had of not being injured. He picked the worst time possible to be healthy. Okay.
Wait a minute, if you're on a buyout, you're not getting money right now. You're not getting paid in the buyout.
You are, yep.
Really, my colleague was saying that you don't in a lockout. Huh, I thought that Cam Barker wasn't making that money, but I guess he is then, huh? That money's guaranteed?
From what I had, anything that was contractually obligated and not predicated on actual play time or taking the ice would actually go through, but we can compare notes and check our sources.
It's an interesting issue. I mean, that's the thing with this lockout. There's still a lot of loose ends where you sit there and go, oh, is player X making this? I don't know. I mean, my perfect example is how Jeff Racy is still in any kind of organization.
And it's because of it. Ironically, it's because he has a two-way contract. He has to be paid. Mm-hmm. Devils are stuck, at least for this year. They're stuck because it's the last year of his quote-unquote three-year contract that he signed. So now a guy like Scott Wedgwood has to sit there and toil in the Philadelphia Flyers ECHL affiliate. And I'm sure they're just treating him oh so well. I've watched one game where he got shelled and the coach just left him in because it was alleged by the Devils that they left him in just because he was a Devils prospect.
Wow.
So it's
you know, I've seen on Capheap they'll show you the AHL salaries these guys are making that are on two-way contracts. So I've never seen what the ECHL equivalent of a guy who's under contract is making. You have any idea what it is? I mean, it's like a.
I don't think it differentiates. I don't think they can differentiate. I mean,
right.
So
from
making
the NHL contract, I think it's. I mean, if they just choose to assign him to the ECHL, he still makes the AHL money.
Okay, so he's
right.
Not getting bumped down a percentage point or something. I see.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, because they the same thing in Springfield. They just send a bunch of guys down to Evansville because they're just too full. I mean, you know, so.
Right.
I'm going to go catch an Evansville-Cincinnati game later in the month to see. Just, I mean, I never thought I'd heard myself saying that, but. but yeah.
That's kind of been the joy so far. I mean, at first, when this lockout came about and seeing out what kind of impact it was going to have on the Texas Stars here, I thought, well, you know, this is too bad because I know of a couple guys that are trying out, you know, that really otherwise would have a spot on this team, you know, would have a chance to develop. And of course, Dallas doesn't really have any, you know, Dallas isn't in a position that like Oklahoma City is where they're sending down, you know, these not big name, but relatively big name players. At the same time, you know, I have to say that so far that the level of competition has been higher. It has been a faster pace. It's been a better game, you know, with the NHL players down. And I was all against it at first. I thought, get, you know, sadly, you know. But no, I gotta say, I'm really enjoying it. Tonight I watched Antoine Roussel go knee to knee on Jordan Eberle. I'm not sure if he came back or not. Roussel had 177 penalty minutes last season.
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
These and other injuries that can be described as only one thing.
Yeah, Nugent Hopkins, he went out last night. Well, he got a stick in the mouth or something. He's knocked out, but he was playing tonight. He just had a cage on, you know. But what are you going to do? These guys are out. They're playing. Yeah, these AHL guys are trying to make a name for themselves. Yeah, it's like Sheldon Soure playing in Hershey a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
How many fights did that guy have to fend off? You know, because people wanted to show themselves, make a name for themselves, you know?
I think everybody went after him. I don't think there was a person. I'd see the box score. It's like Sheldon Soure, fighting major. Sheldon Soure, fighting major. Did Sheldon Soure play at all? I think so. And that's how it was. But he was, you know, he's obviously not the only one. And
when is he
goes
going to get an instigator penalty next is why I want to know. Whenever someone messes with his WWE diva girlfriend, or former now, I should say.
I know. It just works weird this way. But the next one is the most obvious one. And I still find this funny, and I understand the point and the premise, that your NHL team can actually, I hope I'm wording this right, void a player's contract if they suffer a severe injury. Now, is this actually true? I mean, I've heard this and thought maybe it was urban legend, but I figured I would ask Jeff in particular because I'm not even sure on this.
The only time I've ever heard of it, I mean, something I'd have to look into is if they suffer a severe injury while engaging in a prohibited activity. All these guys sign deals that they're not supposed to, you know, go bungee jumping and, you know, ride motorcycles and things like that. And as I recall, and let me see if I can pull it up here, that a contract can be voided if they sustain a serious injury from that. But I don't think in – I've never heard of it in for a non-ice injury.
Right.
So Sammy Sallow's contract could have been voided then if they –
Yeah, four ball is definitely out. But this is the thing. I mean, this is one of those kind of urban owner legends that has been floated out there during the lockout. This is the biggest problem. I have people asking me questions that don't really have a clear answer necessarily. And let's put it this way. Let's be honest. The fan is not going to sit there and want you to give a long, convoluted answer that in short says, I don't know. They want an answer.
And obviously, I think those questions should be saved until after the agreement is signed, whatever that is. Because I don't think anyone would know, to be honest.
Yeah, and
I think if we just look at it rationally, if you get hurt on the ice, your contract should be guaranteed. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. If we look at the concussions that are going on, there are a lot of other ways that players can be injured to the point where they cannot come back. They should be taken care of by their clubs. However, if they do go out and do the bungee jumping or get on their snowboard or whatever it may be and get hurt outside and it ruins their career, then I think the owners have an argument to make in response to not paying out that player's contract, because typically they are written into the contract that they have to avoid said activities. So I think it's really that black and white. If you're injured on the ice, we're going to take care of you. If you're injured off the ice and it's written into your contract that you shouldn't have been doing what you were doing, sorry, guys, these aren't covered.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect when you're talking about coverage is the insurance piece of it, because you're looking at guys who get injured in on-ice activities and their salaries picked up by the insurance that was taken out on the player. And I think where it doesn't cover the player is for non-hockey-related injuries, and that's probably
right.
Why you're looking at...
They have their
own
insurance.
If it's on them to do it and they have insurance, great. And if they don't, it's not going to come down to the team and the player's contract to cover them for it. So if you're rehabbing a knee injury and you end up skiing and re-injuring your knee, you're at the mercy of the team on whether they want to void the contract. And if that's the way it works, that makes sense, and I can absolutely see it. Amazed it hasn't that I can't think of any time when it's actually happened.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I've just been looking, and I see nothing in the CBA or in any of my other things about this. I mean, I think Boston would have probably said goodbye to Mark Savard by now. If they could have done that. Yeah, and it's just sort of antithetical to the whole idea of a guaranteed contract. I mean, you know.
Well, the idiocy comes from the fact that the monies that are being paid are counting against the cap, and I really don't think that's fair to the team. Look at someone like Chris Pronger. If he retires, then, of course, the teams do not have to pay out or it doesn't count towards their salary cap. But as he stays out, that money still counts against the cap. So I think that's sort of ridiculous as well. I think we'd all acknowledge that he has a debilitating injury that's probably going to keep him out or maybe even cause him to retire. The NHL should acknowledge this on a case-by-case basis and make exceptions for teams. I think it's relatively easy for them to be able to do that.
It's not like there's that many players and guys. It ties in perfect to my contention. Or as I like to call it, the Philadelphia Flyers rule, where you can sit there and put a player on the LTIR for 4 years, essentially, or 3.5, in the cases of Mike Rafferty and in particular Darian Hatcher, and I can remember this well.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, that was about $7 million off their salary cap that they were able to stay under because they could designate these guys when they had no hope at all of playing.
Yep.
I mean, and this is where you see the resentment from your small market and mid market owners. I know for a fact that Jeff Vanderbeek said literally one of the things that he was looking at the next CBA was to get rid of this provision completely. And the big market owners have been fighting this tooth and nail all the way through. I mean, let's face it. Neither side is as unified as you would like to believe.
Oh, of course not.
No.
At all. I mean,
it can't possibly be. I agree.
And I think that's part of why we don't see anything close to an agreement.
is because they're so fractured they don't know what to come together on.
Well, to me, it's not so much being fractured. It's like, you know, it's when you have a traditional labor union, you're talking about people who all are in the same income bracket, tax bracket, lifestyle. To me, there is a sort of unity that can be found, economic or however, in a labor union, not in this labor union. I mean, come on, no. The difference between Sidney Crosby and a guy making the league minimum, there's a huge difference between those guys. I mean, they really don't belong in any reasonable labor union together. You know, they just happen to be hockey players.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the big things I pointed out in my article is that, you know, if you were one of the top guys, you know, before the cap came in, you know, the world was a lot better for you. I mean, you know, Joe Sakic had one year where he made $18 million. You know, that leveled off to about $9 million. But you know, everybody kind of focuses on that, and then everybody kind of ignored the floor because that's where the real hurt has come here, is all these guys who could have gotten away with being paid next to nothing, you know, back in the day. You know, are now making some real money, and that's what Bettman's really talking about. He's really talking about the floor, while Fair is talking about the ceiling. And you know, and those interests are vastly different. You know, I mean, does Joe Blow, who's making $1 or $2 million a year, really care about how the length of the contract and your ability to move the cap money one way? No.
Right. No. Not at all.
No,
exactly.
I mean, one of the things I think is regardless of whether you go guaranteed or how you do it on that thing, is your cap hit is what you paid the guy that year, period.
Jeff, it should include the signing bonus as well. It really
What's
should.
That?
It probably should include the signing bonus as well.
Well, yes. Yeah.
The signing bonuses are just another way around the CBA, aren't they, really? I mean, just like these front-loaded contracts are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's odd on what so many things have been started by the CBA, including the Niku Koivu skipped signing bonus contract, where he gets it 1 year, does it the next, gets double it the third year, does it the fourth, gets it the same amount. I kid you not. That contract was legal. And yet you see the Kovalchuk one that got, well, right, and rightfully so, I'll be honest. It rightfully should have been rejected, but not for the reasons that anyone expected. And this is kind of what the problem is with the NHL right now, is that there's so many problems.
Well, whenever I hear, say, Donald Fehr, in fact, that interview that he gave with, I think it was a Hockey News, like a week or two ago, and he says how the players want a free market for their salaries. I mean, I'm not as smart as Donald Fehr in this business, in the business of hockey. But you know, even I know you don't have a free market. You're negotiating for a CBA. That's your market. That's going to set out the terms of your market. You can't have both unless the CBA says, oh, by the way, as far as salaries are, anything goes. You know, which I mean, it just wouldn't work. So players who want free market for this.
Oh, go ahead, Jeff. As ridiculous as the owners claiming that they want profit certainty, when it's not a guarantee at all.
No. I mean, the whole concept. I mean, if we're going to talk business, I mean, then you really can't. I mean, if the whole concept of saying I'm going to commit 57% of my revenue to a particular expense, I don't care what it is ridiculous. I mean,
absurd.
Yeah, it's absurd just on its face from a business standpoint, and everybody just kind of accepts it at face value. You know, if you want to talk the net, if you want to have the players participate in the equity of the team on some sort of a basis, okay, now you're talking a different thing. But saying, you know, you're going to give me 57% of top-line revenue is stupid. Now, the owners are the ones who did it, so, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is where it's tough. I mean, it's you want to sit there, and for me, honestly, the blame goes, no pun intended, 50-50 both ways. You have to have A and B somewhat giving.
I think maybe it's 50-50. Let's throw in the agents, because the agents don't get enough blame here, I don't think.
And they need
to. I feel like the agents
are
skirting blame.
I'll say this. There's some that definitely, you know, here's my problem.
And I'll say this, and I'll be blunt about it, just because. In a way, I cannot actually answer this at all because I have a vested interest in the sense of I know a lot of agents. But I will temper that with the following. They do not completely know what they are doing to this league. I think if they understood it fully, you might see them take a different tack. Now, some of them you're not going to no matter what, like Alan Walsh, who's just caring about the almighty dollar until the cows come home. But guys like Scott Norton, who tend to be reasonable about this. I've talked to Jay Goldman, who's Kovalchuk's agent, and he said something to me interesting about Kovalchuk's contract. And basically it was the following. He didn't necessarily want $100 million per se. It was more Jeff Vanderbeek wanting them to sign him that long. Kovalchuk would have been happy with a 12-year, $90 million deal. But the problem was they couldn't fit the language into the contract. So it was a case where all three sides were to blame, basically, owner, player, agent.
And would he have even been fine with the 5-year deal?
There was a 7-year, 50-something million-dollar deal on the table. That was true. There was that deal on the table. And it wasn't the agent that didn't accept it. It was the Devils because they thought it was too much cap hit because of Parisi. Well, look, once Zach Parisi injured himself 2 years ago, that was the day that the Devils were like, you know what? We're not re-signing you to any long-term deal. Done. They were done. You'll never hear it on the record, but that's literally – he hid the injury and then injured himself worse. And I'll say this to any Minnesota fan, and I even said it to Michael Russo when I was on his show. You just signed a player to a 13-year deal that his knee will never be 100%, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Great job. Zach Parisi, I'll say this on this show, guys, so that way everybody hears this loud and clear. And everybody that's listening and that downloads the show, if Zach Parisi ever scores close to 95 points like he did in his breakout season with New Jersey, I will eat my shoe.
Come on, Parisi, you got to do it.
I will.
I hope Parisi does.
I will eat the sock. I'm sorry. I've watched this guy for a whole year in pain. Because I'll tell you right now, Kovalchuk should have had a 100-point season. He should have had a 100-point season. I don't know how many chances Parisi flubbed all year. I mean, time and in the finals against the Kings especially, where he just – I mean, he was so bad, the goalie sat on him. and that's the thing I'm trying to get at here. This is a guy who had a 69-point season making – $10 million this year for not even playing. Sidney Crosby isn't even making $10 million. And I would pay Crosby $10 million before I would ever play Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, or especially Zach Parisi.
Well, there you have it. There you have the sickness of this league. I mean, now these players feel entitled to these salaries at these levels. The league can't – I don't think the league can sustain it. It's just not a popular enough sport to sustain these kind of salaries, and yet they keep getting them. Nor are they producing to the extent that they're matching these wages. Not even close. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, you really need to. I mean, look at the big picture. You know, you don't have a multi-billion-dollar national broadcast agreement in place that solves a lot of problems. I mean, you've got a little bit less revenue than the NBA, but you got to pay twice as many players.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right? You know, so and yet you're running around with guaranteed contracts and all of this structure that is just, I mean, it's guaranteed you cannot make money operationally. And it's showing.
And a lot of
these
things. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just finishing up the, you know, I mean, the cap has helped a couple of the very rich teams get richer. You know, but for most of the teams, I mean, you know, at the last lockout in 2004, 2005, going into that, 20 of the 30 teams had negative operating revenue. You know, this time, 18 of the 30 have. Okay. So, but that's an illusion too, because a lot of those teams, Dallas, New Jersey, among them, have resorted to debt. To their debt loads have increased substantially to fund that thing. I mean, some other things have gone in there, but you can't obviously do debt financing forever.
Right,
that's a good business.
unless you're the federal government, and then you know we can get it. But then you know, that's, which one are you more tired of, whether the CBA or the election?
Yeah, I mean, or as I joke, Jeff, with this. Or the Jeff Vanderbeek method, where the Devils actually technically made a profit last year, but lost money because they owe all that money from when the wonderful city of Newark, and I love hearing this all the time, you know, when the city of Newark says that the Devils bilked them, they bilked each other, which you rarely can say in sports, but it's true. Two sides actually duped each other. One got stuck with a, you know, moderate to long-term debt in the Devils, and the city got stuck with a short-term debt. So they both kind of got the shaft. And,
you know, a lot of these things that the players are, when we're talking about all this revenue at 57% and coming down, these things that are hurting the long-term financial viability of the league are things that the players now feel an entitlement to. And these are the things that they – these are the only bargaining chips, in my mind, that they have. And they're the ones that hurt the league, at least the league's ability to function as a profitable business, which it ought to. These are the only bargaining chips, and they won't let go of them. It's absurd. That's why I feel like there's no season. That's all.
I think this is where we all start to get angry. As you come and you hear the players come in and they offer up a proposal where they are looking for the owners to help each other out, meaning the top owners and the ones that make the most money, they are looking at to offset the losses of some of the teams that are struggling. The players really aren't willing to give a lot back to that. At the end of the day, a healthy league means bigger contracts, bigger TV deals. It means more jerseys are going to be sold. It means better competition. It means healthy, healthy, healthy. When you have a league that is operating in the manner that it is now, you have the haves and the have-nots, and really the disparity between the two is far too big for it to really work. You're talking about a cancerous situation that's only going to get worse. Even if we do get 50-50, it's still going to be a problem for a lot of these teams to be able to get to that salary cap max. When you analyze the $70.2 million salary cap as it is right now, the majority of the teams are still not spending anywhere near that. In fact, they're staying more close to that $50 million range. That's where the problem is as well. You've got all these teams that can't afford to compete on that level, and you have very few who can, who spend right up to that salary cap level with, of course, a little bit of a cushion for when the trades come up. But at the end of the day, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a functional league, a healthy league, and that is the only thing that's going to work long term. Anything else is a Band-Aid solution. It doesn't address the real problems.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, you know, you've got owners who don't, I mean, and I'm not a, you know, I don't want to be an apologist for the owners, but look, I mean, they don't have any of the flexibility that a customary business owner has to increase revenue. You know, they've got 82 games a year. They can't add games. I mean, you know, they go to playoffs. You know, they've got an arena that holds 18 or 20,000 people. That's what they can do. You know, for most of the teams, and you know, and not everybody's Toronto and Ottawa, where you can charge pretty much whatever the hell you want to charge, and you're going to sell out. You know?
But even still, you couldn't expand, right? I mean, that's your point, is that you couldn't expand the business in some way. in order to find ways to make profits, right? I mean,
yeah.
This is
and I think that's where you start getting into the what's hockey related revenue at that point, right? And that's
right.
And that's where some of the other folks are getting into issues, saying
expanding the business means bringing in more bringing in more fans. It means getting bigger TV deals. It means that you're selling more of your properties. It also means that you're getting more local revenues from the local level or club level. So this is where the growth of the game has to come. It's not going to come from expansion, meaning bringing in more teams. I think we all think that to a certain point.
It's a pyramid scheme. Ultimately.
Yeah, that's not going to work. It's just going to make things worse, once again, water down the product. Really, I think if we're all honest with each other, I think we could all agree that the NHL really could afford to lose a couple teams, if not five or six, and it would probably be a much healthier league because you wouldn't have these clubs struggling so much. There would be more of a pot to draw from. But at the end of the day, we're talking really what we're hinging on is the TV deal. Right now they have, a $2 billion deal with NBC?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the NHL does.
I mean that's considered a big deal for them.
That is a big deal for them. The original deal with Fox was for something like $155 million, $140 million, something like that. So going into a $2 billion deal is a lot bigger for the NHL, and that has to grow over time. That's the only way that they're really going to make much more money, or else we're all looking at pay-per-view, boys.
I mean, we're looking down the barrel, I think, where a lot of people are not. I mean, there's the people out there, and I would have loved to have gotten Mike on tonight. But because literally I didn't even know if I was – the biggest dilemma is when I scheduled the show originally, the weather forecast, and Josh even knows this well because we were talking about it. Right now we were supposed to be experiencing 40 to 50 mile per hour winds, and heavy rains by now. And, there was no way of knowing the storm is going to slow up. So I had to literally plan everything faster than Haley's Comet. But I will say this, the definition of, and I love the hockey related revenue definition because it just keeps me up sleepless for many, many nights. The Devils are a profitable team if you include all the revenue that they get from the events that they host.
Right.
That is what is being lost. And I heard one last week. We're still not sure what happened. But obviously I want to thank everybody for coming on. We've had a fun time tonight doing this. Next week, probably going to be debating with Mr. Fred Poulin on this very issue.
Phoenix.
Until then, you download the show on iTunes and the Hockey Writers, and see you next week. Aloha.
Well, I guess.